It's Mail It In Friday, so you can light her up this weekend with Old Tomorrow Craft Beer.
There's something important I was supposed to do today.
Have 5 daiquiris?
You remember to do that.
I fell asleep by the pool for a few hours.
Did you fall asleep or did you pass out?
Shut up!
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Overdrive continues. Mail It In Friday with a little salsa music because the O-Dog is going to hit the floor tonight for the first time in his professional career. Salsa dancing.
Nobody puts the O-Dog in the corner.
You realize, though, as the male, like, you have to lead. You've got to be
Dude,
Swayze
tonight. You have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
I do. Someone just told me. Steph claims to be, like, an expert at this.
Okay, Steph, what's the routine on this?
Well, she doesn't really know. She just
Dude,
is telling
she said
you.
She went on vacation and did salsa dancing.
No, I've done a lot of salsa dancing in my day.
Okay, so what do I have to do? Like, what is my main thing that I have to focus on? Can you show me a couple steps in the next
hips.
Break?
The hips have got
Steph,
to move.
My hips are locked together.
Well, then you are screwed. You got to get those hips warmed up tonight. Twirls.
Right. We'll figure this out later, okay?
Teach me a couple, like, preliminary moves in the next break.
You guys talk amongst yourselves in the next break.
Me and Steph's bellies will be just bouncing off each other.
There's got to be a backstory behind that.
What?
Well, you got to out Steph.
I think it's known, isn't it? Steffi's having another baby.
Right, exactly. So that's why you're saying, like, if your barrels are touching.
Well, obviously I wouldn't, if Steph was normal, I wouldn't say she had a barrel. Anyway,
Jeremy Schapp from E60 at 5:30. He's got a piece on P.K. Subban airing this weekend on ESPN and on TSN2 on Sunday night at 10 p.m. So we'll catch up with him. Noodles will join us here in a moment. We're going to rank the 7 Canadian teams in terms of their chances of winning a Stanley Cup next year. We're all going to go through it 1 through 7. We don't want Noodles to miss out on this because you know people throughout the country are going to hate our guts based on where we seed their team.
Are we talking to the Noodler now?
Yeah, we're going to call him in a few minutes. Big weekend for the Jays. Donaldson and Tulowitzki back.
Hap around the corner, no? Hap around the corner?
Hap is maybe going to start on Tuesday. Gibbon said that about an hour ago. There's a chance Hap returns on Tuesday. But this is also, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but Kevin Pillar's first game back at the Rogers Centre since the homophobic slur. And I don't think there's going to be much of a reaction. I think most people have moved on. I think people realize he handled it properly. The team handled it properly. Things happen. It was a stupid word. I can't imagine he'd ever say it again. And not that you want to look at it this way, but with Donaldson and Tulowitzki returning tonight, that's so much further down the list of people's priorities or internal conversations, right? Like, Jays fans are thinking, Bringer of Rain is back tonight. Tulo's back tonight. Let's start winning games.
Mm-hmm. So do you think it's the ultimate distraction for him?
I think so. Like, if you're in the media and you didn't get a chance to be down there in Atlanta and you're at the Rogers Center tonight, I think plans change. I don't think you go and talk to Kevin Pillar. I think you talk to Donaldson and Tulowitzki and Gibbons and what he expects. And it's a 10-game homestand. And Ross Atkins has come out over the previous 2 days, including on this show, saying, I'm still optimistic. We can get back in this. A lot of games against the division left. Reinforcements are on their way. The Yankees and the Orioles and the Red Sox have not taken off. But it really does feel like it starts over the next 10 games. 3 against Texas, 3 against Cincinnati, 4 against the Yankees. You've got to go a minimum 6-4 here, I would think.
I find in sports, though, Brian, we do this so much during the season. We already have done that. I think it was the last 10 they just played where they had Seattle, they had Atlanta. And it's like, man, they got to make some hay here. This is their whole season. And then the next block of 10, we're like.
It does. You're right. Generally speaking, and with baseball, it always happens because there's 4 months left in the season. They've got over 100 games left to play. But at some point, I think from a managerial standpoint, they're going to make a decision on whether or not they're buyers or sellers.
If you want to put a big picture, they can't afford another 2-week stretch of god-awful baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just game over. You can't make up that ground. They're already in a situation where it's not likely that they do it.
They're already in almost in miracle mode to begin with. Like, they really need to go on a run, and they need other teams to really fall off. Maybe that's the best way to put it. Can they still survive if they hover around 500 over the next 10 games or 20 games? Yeah, they can. That miracle stays alive. But if they go like 2-8, turn the lights out. Done. Like, if you go 2-8 over the next 10, it's over. Don't sell me on optimism. Don't look back on other historical runs from other teams. In 1978, the Yankees were this far back, and they don't give me that. It's not going to happen. You can hover around 500 for a little bit longer in terms of 5-5 over 10-game spans. But 2-8, 1-9, something stupid like that, it's over. Like, they've used that bullet. You can't do that again. So we'll keep teeing up this big series, this big homestand. Before we get to Noodles, you want to hear the most ridiculous soundbite postgame? Like, this is the opposite of Guy Boucher. I goofed on Guy Boucher a lot over the playoffs because I just thought it was so extreme how he was talking about his team. Like, Ottawa was brutal, and they were so lucky, and every team they played against was the greatest team of all time.
I think Guy Boucher's ego has grown in the last 4 months. I think he's a little bit dramatic in front of the camera. I think he kind of somewhat loves the attention. You got to be confident as a head coach, but he just brings out that vibe where there's a possibility down the road where it might become tiresome for everyone involved.
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Players, media, general manager.
You've got to come up with a new act next year.
No kidding.
You can't
come back
act.
With that one.
Absolutely not. Biggest underdog of all time. You played it once.
Yeah.
And I think he played it too much, to be honest.
Yeah, and he's got to go to management if he wants more pieces and say, let's add, and then we took one step last year, now we want to take the next one. Not, we have, these guys are the best players in the world. His act potentially, well, I know it does. It can become tiring for everyone.
All right, how about this? Tyronn Lue, who a week ago claimed he had the toughest job in the NBA, which is just outrageous. Imagine being the head coach of LeBron's team and claiming you have it tough. Like, it was just the most insulting comment to anyone with a brain that's a sports fan. Because Lou is
the only element
coach.
I can think of is just handling the personalities.
Well, he said, listen, there's pressure on us because of who we are. Well, yeah, okay. From a media standpoint, but X's and O's and trying to win games, you go into every game thinking, we're winning tonight. How difficult is that? To be a coach that knows you're going to win.
Hey, I agree.
But listen to this spiel postgame.
This is a big step for us. I mean, especially what we went through all season, and you know, we were doubted throughout the regular season, you know, all year. So to come back and do what we did, to go 12-1 in the playoffs, to be playing good basketball, I'm very happy, and I'm going to enjoy it until we play Golden State.
When was Cleveland doubted? Who was doubting that Cleveland?
Well, they had that rough patch where they couldn't win a game. They were getting just crushed by everyone.
But did anyone ever say they're going to lose in the first round?
Oh, there was a lot of people saying this team might not have it this year. They're beatable. Maybe this is the year the Raptors can take over Cleveland.
No.
That talk was out there.
No, it was forced takes. That's what it was.
Okay, well, you asked me if that talk was out there, and the answer was yes,
okay,
it was.
Okay, but it's not. It was never genuine. Like, it was never genuine. It never. No one actually thought Cleveland wasn't
was
going to make it
moment.
To the finals.
Cleveland was playing like garbage, and all the people, even our guys, were saying, "Look, this might be the year you can take down Cleveland." Was it disingenuous?
Yes.
Okay.
I think it
but
was.
They said it, and it was at that time it was appropriate.
And then he goes 12-1. He drops that. And to go 12-1, and the only game we lost, we blew a 21-point lead in Boston.
Got her back on the tracks.
Yeah, like, get out of here. All right, we got Noodles on hold. We don't want to make him wait. We'd never want to do that to one of our own. And he had the bacchiotomy again, and I think everything's going all right. We're hopeful that we can pencil him into the lineup next week, but what's the Jerry's percentage, Noodles? We'll see you in here on Monday.
Bacchiotomy, is that what the medical term is now? Or
yeah, have you ever seen Half-Baked, the movie?
No.
Half-Baked? You got to see
yes.
it.
What's the Brazzers-otomy on the couch?
You think I can move on the couch? The last thing I want to do is be looking at that website. I can't even move.
So what? Like, what's your daily routine like right now?
It's embarrassing. I'm like an 85-year-old man. Like I've been, I watched a movie yesterday on Bernie Madoff, which was pretty cool. The Wizard of Lies. It was a great movie. I've watched all of Homeland season six. I've caught up on all the movies and everything. I went on to a bunch of different analytics sites just to kind of sniff around and see what the numbers were talking about with teams. Like I've basically done everything. You know, if you ever said you had a week to do nothing, you do nothing but catch up on things. I've done it, but I still feel useless and I'm embarrassed.
Right.
So the Jerry's percentage is very high that I'll be in Monday unless for some reason I'm hit by a bus this weekend.
Well, fingers crossed, man. We could use you in here because I have admittedly not had the greatest week. I've been joining a gym. I've been working out. O-Dog's a bit distracted because he's going salsa dancing tonight. So it's the only
well,
thing
sure
on his mind.
That's going to go over well.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
You not have faith that I could salsa dance?
I think you're one of those guys who has tremendous rhythm, and you move well, and I won't say for like a big guy, but you have great like rhythm. I guarantee you that you could tickle, like you could absolutely dominate the dance floor. I just don't know if it would be a smooth look or it'd look like you're grinding it out. I'm not sure. I would pay a lot of money in a bag to watch that be a fly on the wall there.
Well, I'm not Elaine.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm saying I guarantee you, you have tremendous rhythm. It's just it'd be a bit awkward to watch you go to work. That's the thing.
Well, he brought it up, the Chris Farley playing Barney in the Chippendales skit on SNL. Like, I could see him being Barney, like, surprisingly nimble, kind of twinkle toes, moving and shaking and feeling pretty good about himself, but just misses out on the big opportunity.
Well, if he loses his tarp, there'll be some people running for the exit. So keep the tarp on, or at least keep, like, don't look like John Horn and have, like, five buttons undone.
Yeah.
Maybe do, like,
potato chips in my chest hair.
Exactly. Just take it easy. Like, and don't, the thing is everyone wants to be a hero right from the get-go. Everyone thinks they're suave. Everyone thinks that they know what they, because they saw Dirty Dancing and saw one movie, everyone thinks that they're Antonio Banderas. So just take it easy out there. Don't pull a hamstring or else it'll be me and Hayes in there alone on Monday.
I'm a little concerned about that now that you bring it up, that you're going to throw your back out or pull a hammy. And Noodles, it'll be like a tag team. Noodles will tag back in, and you'll leave for a week.
Exactly. You'll
I'm
be
worried.
Lieutenant Dan on Monday.
Right. Anyway, we had to include you in this because you know what is going to happen here. We're going to rank all of the Canadian teams, 1 through 7, as of today in terms of the way we believe they have the chance of winning a Stanley Cup next year. So not all 31 teams going into next year, including
right.
Vegas, but 1 through 7, the 7 Canadian teams. And whenever we do this, they post it online, and then people in Winnipeg and Edmonton and Montreal hate our guts. So we didn't want to do this on our own. We had to essentially suck you into this because the venom, it will be spit.
Potent.
Yes, it will be potent. So who wants to take the charge here? Who wants to go through their list first, 1 through 7?
I will go first.
Well, I just have one quick question before we get at this, because I want to know the parameters, because this is what's going to happen is I know both of you are going to have the Toronto Maple Leafs as number one because you guys are lunatics.
Wrong,
wrong.
You're fake news.
Hit them with a Trump. Hit them with a Trump.
Wrong.
That's right. Again.
All right, fair enough then. But I guess the parameters are as the teams look right now, and I'll give you a quick example. Calgary has no goalie.
That's
so
what, but Jamie, you can include that in your, that's what I talked to Steph about this afternoon. You can include different variations or different things that can happen in your answers right now. And obviously come September when everyone's got a full roster, we'll revisit this.
Yeah, that's a good call. That's a good call because right now, these teams are going to look a lot different than they're going to look in September.
Oh, yeah, agreed. For sure. And listen, be reasonable. Like, you can't say, I got the Canucks because I think they're going to trade for Sid, Gino, and Doughty, and Carlson.
No, no. I think comfortably all three of us are going to have the Canucks at number 7.
Absolutely. Vancouver's a lock for the 7 spot. I think the number 1 spot is a lock, too. But, O-Dog, kick off the party.
I've got Edmonton Oilers at number 1, just from what they've grown this year. It's going to be Connor McDavid's third year. That's when these generational players typically strike, possibly some additions, some subtractions, just as Noodles mentioned. I've got Ottawa Senators at number two, just based on what they've done this year. You have to give them credit. They do need to try to find, much like Toronto in years past and Montreal right now, I love Turris, I love Pageau, if they can anyway find an elite centerman. But we know that's not possible because they're not out there. The Winnipeg Jets, I have at number three.
Wow, that is a bombshell, Noodles.
Because I think if they can get some structure, discipline, and mix in a goaltender, that's a team that could be ready to win right now. At number four, I have the Toronto Maple Leafs. Couple defensemen away, possibly make a step next year. Calgary, I have at five, similar situation. They need a goaltender. Montreal at six. There's not much I like about the Montreal Canadiens except their goaltender. I like Shea Weber, but offensively, they're a bit of a mess right now. And obviously at number seven, I have the Vancouver Canucks.
Very interesting list. What do you make of that, Noodles? And then break down yours one through seven.
It's interesting, and I actually agree on a lot of different fronts. The Winnipeg one's really interesting for me, and I'll add in my analysis. You can add that they lost almost 400 man games to injury last year.
Yeah.
So that's a team on the rise. I'll kick it off. I don't disagree with a lot of the sentiments, other than I think the only thing, being a former goalie, Carey Price can do things on his own. He hasn't done it yet, but I have Montreal higher than that. So I agree. Edmonton, I think, is number one, just because even if you bring back the same team, I know they're probably going to sign Chris Russell. That team just continues to grow. So I'm there for one. Fresh in my mind, obviously, is Ottawa, and I agree with you. I had Ottawa at two, but Thomas Chabot, Logan Brown, and Colin White have to be a part of the equation for me, because some of their core is young, and they've got to turn that over quicker. And you're going to bring back the same team, obviously, that just had a lot of success, same structure in that. I think Ottawa's window is a real short one. It's a couple years just based on the coach and how frustrating that can be on a nightly basis. So if it is, it was this year or maybe a smaller window next year, but I have to just give Ottawa some love for what I just watched in the playoffs. I had a tie at number three, and I know you guys would get pissed at this.
Noodles,
but
this is not future headlines. We cannot have a tie here.
Just, you got to have a three and four, bud.
Okay, well, I'm going to have, here's what I had. I had the Canadiens at three based on they were top 10 in man games lost and Carey Price, and I still believe there's going to be some moves made there. So when you have a lot of man games lost, and I had the Toronto Maple Leafs, I guess, at 3A, what concerned me with them is they had basically the minimal amount of man games lost, but they need their D to be upgraded. So I think we're going to be having a different scenario come September on them. If they end up landing somebody out of Anaheim or something, that changes the dynamic for me. You know, if it's Anaheim,
they got a chance at movement, is what you're saying, come September. Like, you might adjust that and move them up.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Winnipeg was right there for me because, like I said, just under 400 games to injury. They're a real good team, up-and-coming team. Their goalie is 23 years old, so I'm going to give him another year of development, and they've got assigned a veteran goalie to help him out, whether it's a Ryan Miller or somebody like that. So I had Calgary just above Vancouver because they have no goalie. Now, if Calgary goes and acquires Marc-Andre Fleury or Corey Schneider or Jimmy Howard, Calgary climbs up the ranks for me because they've got somebody who you trust in net. I don't trust what's going on in net there. So I guess that's my list. Vancouver's a distant seven right now because they're in a rebuild. I don't know what's going on there.
Okay, that's not bad. So revisit that quick. What do you have one through seven? Run it through.
Edmonton, Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto, Winnipeg, Calgary, Vancouver.
Okay. We're all in conjunction one in seven. I got Edmonton number one. I was really impressed with the way they played, the way they're built. Every team in the league can use improvement, but I think Draisaitl playing 82 games as the second line center is only going to improve what he could do in the playoffs, and he was money.
They will be a very difficult out.
They're going to be a very difficult out. They got the coach, they got the goalie. They could use a bolstering on the back end, but they got a pretty good defense for sure. And I feel great about the Oilers. I think they got a real shot at winning a cup or competing for one next year. I got the Leafs at two. I got the Leafs at two because I think there is going to be a lot more growth than these other teams on the list. I've been saying this for a while. I know some people are expecting these young players to take a step back. I'm not. I expect them to get better. I think you look at the best players in the league.
William Nylander was just the MVP of the World Championships.
Exactly. Why can he not be a stud next year?
Well, I think he can be. I think he can be. The only problem is if they're coming back with the same D.
Yeah, for sure. They need help there. There's no denying that. And obviously I will apply that where all of these teams outside of Edmonton I think have blemishes. And Vancouver's so far out of the game it doesn't even matter.
Right.
But I think the Leafs will address the defense core. And I think with Babcock there, Anderson will continue, hopefully, to be healthy. And I think these young players will continue to grow. I think they got a real chance at making a big, big step next year. I'll go Ottawa 3 based on what I saw. I'm a little bit nervous because I'm concerned the Boucher act will run really thin. Like I think it's very tiresome. I think he's all over them. I think he wants to play a certain style that has been effective so far. I mean, they just got to game 7 of an Eastern Conference final, but trying to get that kind of reaction out of your team again next year with the same MO, I think it's imperative that Boucher changes the way he does things. But I'll give him credit. They're still a good team, good defense. If Craig Anderson plays a full year and stays healthy, he can be money for them.
Just an FYI, they're not changing jack squat.
You don't think Boucher will change anything?
No.
I think he has to.
No,
he won't. If he doesn't, then honestly, even though I'm saying this right now, he's further down my list.
The only way he does if Erik Karlsson goes, you better switch some things up or you're going to have some problems because he basically runs that organization.
I wanted to jump in too because I thought that's why I thought Ottawa's got some guys in the pike that you could add to the skill level, right? So instead of rolling out the Stahlbergs and Chris Kelly's and that, you're going to have some young talent infused in there. So that's why I was thinking, even if you've got a tight system, if you've got a system with more skill, you can actually upgrade that. You know what I mean?
Well, exactly. And listen, I got them at 3. Like, that's not way down the list. We've all got them, I think, in the top 3 or 4. I got the Flames 4, and I understand the goaltending's a big issue, but I do believe they will address it. And I look at the way, like, Nashville's built, Anaheim's built. Their defense, it was up and down last year at times. But I think when you look at the way they played down the stretch and in the second half, they had such a horrible first half. It was tough to get a read on what they were really all about. And it didn't help that they drew Anaheim and it got ugly for them quick. But I think if they address that position, I like their defense. I think Brody had a much better second half. Giordano, Dougie Hamilton had a pretty good year. And the forward crop, they've got enough there, I think, to compete. I think they could maybe do what Ottawa did a year ago. I get the Habs 5 just because of price. I'm with you, O. I just don't like the way they're built. I think they got big issues there. I love Price, and Price, he's still the man, and he's going to be able to win a lot of games. But he was the man this year, and they got ousted by New York. I get the Jets 6. You guys are further ahead than I am with them. I need to see them even play a playoff game before I can really get a read on them.
Well, they played 4 a couple of years ago, and Anaheim just roasted them.
It got ugly. Yeah. And listen, I like the pieces, but I've been hearing about them for so long. They're this young team that's going to break out.
Enough's enough. They're not going to the wall with that. We're a few players away, young guys. No.
It never happens. And so I got the Jets at 6. I got Vancouver at 7. I mean, Vancouver, there's no point in even having a debate about them. They're not winning a Stanley Cup or competing one. So I got Edmonton, Toronto, Ottawa, Calgary, Montreal, Winnipeg, Vancouver. So
yeah, I agree. I don't see these lists aren't that far off. My biggest concern, like I said, if the Calgary Flames come out tomorrow and say, we're bringing Brian Elliott back, does that change your mind?
Yeah.
Because
yeah, for sure.
That's what scares the hell out of me because I think Calgary's farther along, but you can't go Philadelphia on this and always go second-rate goaltending where you need a top-flight guy on paper. You can't go Dallas like this either. Like the Dallas Stars went and got Ben Bishop because he's the best unrestricted free agent or was the best unrestricted free agent available.
Jamie, you could argue St. Louis has done it too. They've had a team that's been designed to win for close to 10 years. And other than getting Ryan Miller in there at the deadline 1 year, it's been Elliott, it's been Allen. Allen was very good this year, but you know what?
Yeah. You need clout. Like that's why I'm saying our lists are going to look a lot different, but if Calgary Flames somehow pull a rabbit out of a hat and get Fleury at the end of the playoffs or they convince New Jersey to give up Corey Schneider, then you're talking about a team that climbs a lot higher on my list, because there's a lot of depth there. It's just goaltending is everything. And if you're rolling out Brian Elliott as your number 1A, like, they're farther down the list for
me. No, I hear you, man. And I think that can apply to a lot of teams. Like, I think you look at Ottawa, if they went out there and got Matt Duchene or something, you know, maybe I'll look at them and say, you know what, I got to move them up. Like, I might put them at one all of a sudden. I might, if the Habs went out and acquired a couple of big offensive weapons, you would probably be in a position where you'd have to move them up. Like, the Habs are the interesting team because with Price, I fully expect them to make the playoffs as it currently stands. I just don't think they're built to win four rounds in the playoffs.
Well, they had 47 wins last year.
Exactly.
That's the scary part.
Exactly. And they got Julian with a full year, full camp, and that could play a significant impact. But I think, you know, we all agree. Oilers 1, Vancouver 7, everything in the middle could be all over the place, really. You could almost have any combination, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and it wouldn't be that shocking.
And then you could put together your wish list, because your wish list for those teams, like I say, Calgary needs a starting goaltender. Winnipeg needs help with their goaltender, and they need some of the guys to turn the corner. Toronto needs a couple defensemen. Like, Ottawa needs a little bit more skill set up front to add to that defensive core. Like you say, right down the line, outside of Edmonton and Vancouver, you can really adjust really quickly.
Well, we're going to be in Chicago in about a month, and I'm sure a lot of news is going to come out at the draft and over the next couple of weeks beyond that, because a lot of movement's going to take place. We're looking forward to it, and hopefully that will apply to you, buddy. Get moving, man. Get in here on Monday.
I'm moving. I'll be in there. Like I say, I may be assisted. I may come in with a cane or a wheelchair or something, but I'll be in there. I'm telling you.
All right, man. We're looking forward to it. We'll see you on Monday at 4 p.m.
Sounds good.
All right. It's on a platter for you to say. We'll chat then.
I'm fading.
You're out of it. Good 90 minutes. You went first with your list. That's the problem. It's the same thing with Jerry's. You pounce with something and then you're gone. You need to start going last when we do these things.
I agree.
Then you stay then engaged.
I pay attention. Because once I get my list,
you're gone.
Gone.
See you later. YouTubing
Yankees
salsa videos.
Yankees win. Gone.
The old John Sterling. The
Yankees win. The old dog's out.
All right. Jeremy Schapp from ESPN, host of ESPN's E60, will join us. He's got a new piece on PK Subban debuting on Sunday night. We're going to get LeBron in here. We'll keep teeing up the Jays 10-game homestand, future headlines in an hour. Moving and shaking on a mail-it-in Friday, brought to you by Old Tomorrow Craft Beer and its brand-new Lighter Up Light Lager. It's super crisp, clean, and crushable. Look for Lighter Up Lager, now available at the beer store.
Mail it in Salsa Friday.
Love it. Thanks. All right, we got to get the salsa music over with, because we got like a serious guest coming up, a real journalist.
So what? It's still a theme for the day.
Jeremy Schapp from ESPN will join us here in a moment. We're talking about the 24th anniversary of Jose Canseco taking a ball off the head that ended up being a home run. And I said, I think it's one of the most memorable moments of the past 30 years. Like, you disagree with me. You called it a blooper as opposed to like a highlight. But I'm saying, if you ask baseball fans, like, a play that sticks out, I think it would be top 10 on a lot of people's list. And I saw Buster Olney tweeting this out earlier. On this date in baseball history, the strangest looking play ever. So if Buster thinks it's the strangest looking play, it's got to be considered one of the most memorable, wouldn't you say?
Really? Do you think that's more strange than Roger Clemens throwing half of a baseball bat at Mike Piazza? Was that not strange?
That would be high on the list, wouldn't you say? Memorable moves over the past 30 years?
Yeah.
Anyway, Jeremy Schapp, he's the host of ESPN's E60. They've got a debut this upcoming Sunday at 9 p.m. It's going to be debuting on TSN2 at 10 p.m., where he's been following around PK Subban for a long, long time. And the timing is perfect. I wonder if it's coincidence that it's coming out when PK happens to be going to the Cup Final. Or was this always the plan? Let's bring in Jeremy Schapp from ESPN. Take us through that, Jeremy. I mean, this seems like pretty good timing for you guys to be unveiling a new piece on PK Subban.
We always knew the Preds would be there.
Right.
Well, You know, when you work on a piece for as long as we've been working on this one, it's like Gone with the Wind. You know, eventually the team's going to get there to the finals. So, yeah, that's the way it just happened to work out. I can't say that there's any clairvoyance involved. No, we just got lucky and we kept pushing it back. You know, we were going to put the piece on last spring. I mean, the spring of 2016, and then the Canadians don't make the playoffs. He's not playing. Then we're thinking, oh, maybe we'll put it in the fall, beginning of the season. But, you know, he's in Nashville, and we got to kind of update a lot of stuff. So, yeah, no, better to be lucky than smart. That's a story of my life.
Jeremy, I've lived in the States for 10 years. I followed a lot of your stuff. Is this your first hockey piece? I don't remember a lot of your stuff doing hockey.
No, it's not my first hockey piece. I know that's the convention. No, I love doing hockey pieces. Have we done a million hockey pieces? No, and a lot of them are the kinds of pieces that, you know, I'm sure our friends at the NHL aren't happy that, you know, we've done. But no, I've covered my – but the last big E60 hockey piece I did, to tell you the truth, probably was a couple of years ago, and it was it's one of my all-time favorites. It's still one of my favorite stories. I did a Travis Hamonic profile a couple of years ago. Telling his whole story about losing his father when he was 10 years old and how, you know, he dedicates himself now to helping kids who've lost a parent, and how after every home game, you know, he spends time with a kid who's lost a parent, and now he's doing it on the road as well. But over the years, I've done plenty of hockey stories. Jeez, I consider people, you know, whenever I get asked, like, what's the coolest thing you've seen in sports? I've been doing this for 25 years. I've been all the Olympics and the World Cups. The best thing I've ever seen in sports, I covered the last game at the Forum in 96, and I'll never forget that night.
So why PK then? Why decide this is your guy, first time in a couple of years you focus specifically on an NHL player? Why PK Subban?
The personality, the charisma combined with the skill level. You know, there's just a rich story there. There's so much to it, as you guys know better than I do, having probably spent a lot more time with him than I have even over the last few years. You know, he's a guy who is about style and substance. He's a guy who is obviously a completely legitimate star in the National Hockey League, one of the best players in the world. Who has this unique background as the son of immigrants from the Caribbean, one of the few prominent black faces in professional hockey these days, and a guy who has, you know, been, I think outspoken is not the right word. I've talked about this because, you know, if you go back and you look at his track record, it's not like he says things that really shock you or that are incendiary, but he's a guy who has a talent for candor, if I could put it that way. And he's just fun. You know, he's a fun guy to do a story about.
We're chatting with Jeremy Schapp, host of ESPN's E60. The E60 profile on PK Subban is airing this Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern time on ESPN, 10 p.m. Eastern time on TSN2.
How do you break down for, you just said, the charisma, the talent, all that? Is he one of those guys that just is that? Or there's another part of the hockey world, because in the hockey world, there's this old school thought process where it's like, don't be that guy that commands that attention. So is he charismatic, or is a guy that just loves attention?
I think there's an element of both. I think the charisma is genuine. I don't think he's ginning stuff up, you know, that it's got to be me all the time. I understand that old school mentality. There's that same kind of old school mentality in baseball a lot, and I think particularly in Montreal that rubs some people the wrong way, where the organization is number one and the individual is secondary or less than that. But, you know, you guys know he's a guy who wears his heart on his sleeve, who committed himself body and soul to that franchise and that organization. And I think he was shocked and hurt and heartbroken when he got traded. And we could argue, you know, whether it was a good trade, a bad trade, good for both teams, bad for both teams, whatever it was, you know, from now until kingdom come. But it was a blockbuster. It was stunning. And, you know, I think it raises questions about exactly what was the rationale in Montreal. You know, a guy who's 4 years younger than Weber, a guy who's got all this talent, a guy who's embraced that city and that culture, you know, like perhaps no one else. What was it all about? And, you know, kind of those moments where he was publicly humiliated by his coach, which seemed beyond the pale to some observers. You know, I think there is, you know, a big part of him that's vain. You know, he likes to take off his shirt, and he likes to talk about his brand and all that kind of stuff that is what we're accustomed to with the modern athlete. But in hockey, it's still like, why does this guy want to separate himself?
The one comment that, like, he comes out and says, I still just cannot believe that I'm not a Montreal Canadian, but I don't care about that anymore because now I'm a Nashville Predator. He does really care that he's still not a Montreal Canadian, doesn't he?
Oh, I think 100%. I mean, look, I did that interview with him. That was just probably 5 or 6 weeks after the trade took place. And I think he was still in kind of a state of shock about the whole thing. I don't know if he's feeling exactly that way now. I'm sure the fact that he's about to play in the Stanley Cup Final for the first time in his career, you know, mitigates a lot of that. But, you know, when he says, I don't care, that's not true. He cares. He cares deeply. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he'd put his whole life there. It's not just, you know, the $10 million he donated to the Children's Hospital, but, you know, he considered himself, I think, by that point, last June when the trade took place, an institution in Montreal. And they proved to him that he wasn't.
We're chatting with Jeremy Schapp, host of ESPN's E60. The E60 profile on PK Subban airs this Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern time on ESPN. It debuts at 10 p.m. Eastern time on TSN2 up here in Canada. Including PK in this, but you've come across so many different athletes, so many different profiles. How difficult is it to actually get the real person to show themselves on camera?
It's hard. You know, it's hard. It depends on the person. There are people, obviously, who are more private than others, people who are more introspective than others. You know, I mean, I don't want to get all deeply philosophical here, right? But we know people. We work with people for decades sometimes, know them forever. How well do we really know them? How often do we hear them? Able to really go deep about themselves. It's not something that everybody can do or is comfortable doing. I'll tell you, of all the people I've spent time interviewing over, you know, while I've been working in the business, the guy who is most that layer beneath the skin, the guy who is most prepared to talk about his innermost feelings and insecurities and vulnerabilities and mistakes has always been Mike Tyson. You know, there are, you know, here's a guy who is a convicted rapist, a guy who has committed other violent crimes, who's done terrible things. But he's also somebody who has subjected himself to his own psychoanalysis in a way. And he's somebody who I feel like there is no guard up. You're getting, there's no attempt to create artifice. But there aren't a lot of guys like that.
Yeah, it is very difficult. And I've seen a lot of your pieces, and I think you make a great point about Tyson. He does seem to live without filter, but like just using my own experience or my own situation, if you called me up and said, okay, I'm coming up to Toronto with a camera crew to follow you around for a day, you know, I'd set up a foursome at the most exclusive golf club, and then I'd have dinner at an exclusive club, and I'd pretend like that was my life, and then you'd leave, and I'd sit on the couch like a slob for 48 hours, because it's just not reality. I mean, have you come across that, where you leave someone, you leave a city or leave a situation, and you go, there's no way that's real. That guy just completely put forth a farce of a lifestyle.
I'm trying to think. I mean, you know, often what we do, you know, look, sometimes you're going into those situations, you're spending just a few hours with somebody, you're not even meeting their family, sometimes you're not even going to their home. You know, how deep you're really able to get, not very deep in those situations. And so, you know, but you're not necessarily trying to give people the ultimate character study. You know, my father used to say, in TV, you know, there are short pieces that are superficial, and then we get to do longer pieces, and they're superficial too, because you can only go so far below the surface. Sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. Sometimes people are willing to let you in, sometimes they're not. I did a profile a few years ago of Leo Messi, okay, arguably the most famous athlete on the planet, the most accomplished guy in the world. You know, we fly to Barcelona and we get like, you know, an hour with Leo Messi. This is a big, you know, dealing with the international soccer stars is the toughest. And, you know, somehow this gets arranged. They're flying in art directors from all over the world and camera crews and stuff. You know, I sat down with the guy for an hour. Did I really know anything more about Leo Messi an hour later than I did when I sat down with him? I tried. We're not even speaking the same language, so it amounts to about half an hour conversation once you get through translation. No, other than the fact that I got the impression that soccer is all that really matters to the guy.
Can you do an E60 profile on Shaq's foot?
You know, I would like to, but I think we would need some kind of X rating, something like that, because that thing is, I described it this way a few hours ago on Outside the Lines, that thing is a crime. I mean, and he should probably be brought up on some kind of charges. I don't know what's on the docket at The Hague right now, the International, you know, Criminal Court, but to subject people to images of that.
Gross, man.
It was a new definition. I think there's the movie where they looked down at the toes and they decided if it was hammer time on the toes, whatever movie that was.
It was brutal. It reminded me of, I don't know, do you guys remember the, the Keenan Ivory Wayans film, I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker?
Yes.
You remember Jim Brown is in the film, and kind of out of nowhere at the end of the film, like Jim Brown's running around chasing somebody with a gun or something. He takes it. The whole movie, the conceit is he's complaining about how much his feet hurt. And you're like, oh, he's just an old guy complaining about his feet. And then he takes his shoe off, and it's like this throbbing, pulsating mess. That's what it was like.
That's Shaq, and he's got no excuses. That's just his foot. I mean, it's gross, man.
Well, you know, he's a big guy. It's a lot of wear. Think about the hundreds of pounds of pressure every time that guy takes a step.
No kidding. And that's been happening since he was like 5 years old.
Big guy.
No kidding. The E60 profile on PK Subban airs this Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern time on ESPN, 10 p.m. Eastern time on TSN2. He is Jeremy Schapp, host of ESPN's E60. We're looking forward to it. Thank you for this, Jeremy.
Thanks for the time, guys.
There he is. Jeremy Schapp.
Good dude.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. He's done a lot of these. I mean, he's 60.
Done a lot
great
of
work.
Interesting stuff.
I think I would fake it, though. Like, I would pretend like I was living a lifestyle that was completely bogus.
I wonder what the Preds think of this. It's all about the team, all about the team, all about the team. Day before the Stanley Cup Finals.
Interesting timing, you're right. Very interesting timing. And you know who doesn't care?
PK Subban.
Or ESPN. Yeah. They don't own the rights. What do they care?
Yeah.
It's a good point. Now, I don't think PK can control that, but you wonder if
I understand
like,
that, but I'm wondering if the Preds are like...
Really? Yeah, your E60 profile's blowing up?
Yeah. Day before the finals?
That's a good point. LeBron in studio, future headlines in about 45 minutes, and we're teeing up the 10-game homestand for the Jays starting tonight with the Rangers in town. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. Don't forget, O-Dog Noodles and I are gearing up for the Scotiabank Road Hockey to Conquer Cancer Tournament September 23rd at Woodbine. Visit tsn1050.ca to make a donation on behalf of Team Overdrive. For every $20, you'll be entered to win roster spots on the team for you and a friend. All proceeds go to Princess Margaret Cancer Center. Pierre LeBrun in studio, future headlines at 6:30, brought to you by 2-for-1 Pizza. Final hour of the week up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app.